It's right there in the original 12 steps, and it starts at number 2. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And in number 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Numbers 5, 6, and 7. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. We humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And finally, in 11 and 12, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The 12 steps, or guiding principles, first laid down by Alcoholics Anonymous in the late 1930s, have helped many, many, many people since then deal with a variety of addictions. But there are some who struggle not just with their addiction, but also with what seems to be the centrality of religion or spirituality in these 12-step programs. What do you do if you want to get clean, but you don't believe in God? You could try Buddhism. The Buddhist Recovery Network, in their own words, use Buddhist teachings, traditions, and practices to help people recover from the suffering caused by addictive behaviours, and it's sometimes described as an 11th-step program. While AA is widespread, there's only one Buddhist recovery centre in New Zealand.
My name's Navachitta. I'm a member of the Tree Ratna Buddhist Order, and we're in the Auckland Buddhist Centre.
Navachitta works in the community as a drug and alcohol counsellor, but she doesn't refer to herself in those terms when she works for the Buddhist Recovery Network. She says she's a teacher of Buddhist principles to people racked by addiction and who want to change their lives. I ask her what those principles are.
Well, there's the obvious one. Mindfulness is getting quite a lot of currency at the moment. There are certainly other Buddhist principles that help in addiction, such thing as cultivating compassion. The problem often with people who, in early recovery in particular, they seem to be full of a lot of self-loathing. That can be something really important, to cultivate compassion towards oneself, and to also realise that emotions and thoughts aren't necessarily real. We invest them with a lot more reality than they in fact have. And we try and train people to see that it's basically mental static that we take to be real, which causes us suffering.
When Navachitta works for the District Health Board, she avoids terms like Buddhism or spirituality because of the need to be secular. This can be tricky because, as we've said, a lot of addiction programs have adopted the 12-step principles.
Yes, and some of the language in AA is quite heavily clothed in theism, if you like, even though they deny that there is a theistic element to it. There is a conflict there in a way, but it's just, I think it's more like they see that AA, the 12-step program, works so beautifully. Mm-hmm. It is a very good system of healing. And we are not in opposition to this. We are basically an adjunct to AA. In fact, they do have a step 11, which is to find prayer and meditation. And so a lot of people don't know how to meditate, so we're creating the conditions for them to learn to meditate here. Mm.
So you work with it's complementary rather than instead of?
Well, I believe it's complementary. And in fact, it's interesting because Dr. Bob, way back in the 30s, who was one of the founders of AA, he had what they call the Akron Papers, which he was expounding the virtues of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. And that's just living ethically, really, living ethically, cultivating mindfulness, working an appropriate livelihood, things like that. And apparently he had quite a lot of Buddhist books in his bookshelves, so I don't feel in any opposition to the 12-step program, and in fact I actually work in a 12-step situation here in Auckland.
Nevertheless, for some, words like spirituality are still a stumbling block, especially for some addicts who have no faith. This is Phoebe, a recovering addict in a fellowship in Auckland who also attends sessions at the Auckland Buddhist Centre. She's been in recovery for about 2 years and tried meditation before getting clean.
Well, I first came because I hoped that meditation would help get me clean and sober, and it didn't. I started coming once I got into a fellowship, partly because I couldn't identify with the word God, and I couldn't identify with the way a lot of people in the program talk about God. It didn't make sense to me, and so I came back to this group hoping, because it's specifically a Step 11 group, with the hope that I would find a definition of God that resonated with me.
This is Anthony, who did try to get clean once before. It didn't work.
I initially first entered recovery about 15 years ago and was sober for approximately 5 years, but did that largely on what would probably be termed self-will and didn't do much of the suggested things that people think help with recovery. I decided that I knew better than all the other agencies that are offering help. And consequently, things went well for a while. My life got a lot better, of course, with abstinence for 5 years. I got married, got a very sort of successful and prestigious sort of job, et cetera, et cetera. Nice income. And all of those things actually can be quite disastrous for someone with my inclinations. So it all went downhill. And after another 10 years of giving it another crack with actually far worse results this time, I went back to 12-step meetings and was told by a friend of the Buddhist Recovery Network. I had no idea what that meant.
Step 11 emphasises prayer and meditation to improve contact with God as the individual understands him. But for both Anthony and Phoebe, getting a handle on a concept of God or spirituality was nearly impossible.
It seems to be in different fellowships, because there are several 12-step fellowships, it seems to be to a greater or lesser extent, depending which fellowship you're attending, a really central part of some of them. And in fact, some members will go so far as to say that if you don't understand a God concept, you will not succeed and you will relapse, which I think is a tad of a negative way of looking at it, and could lead people to a sense of confusion and hopelessness, really, if they don't click with that straight away.
Hopelessness and confusion being great things for addicts, obviously.
Oh, yeah, because we have one surefire way of getting rid of those feelings, those uncomfortable feelings.
Indeed.
So I did endeavour to do that and began praying. You know, I just sort of walk around my house talking to the ceiling, really, and called that praying for some time. But none of it really rang true with me. And I guess the difference for me coming here was it was more engaging with spirituality rather than so much a dogmatic religion as such. In fact, I'd been coming here about 6 months before I opened a dictionary one day. I thought, what the hell does spirituality mean? And I actually looked it up. I had to admit that I'd been coming here that long before I bothered to do that. And it just means, you know, pertaining to the spirit, to the, you know, to your inner being.
In a Buddhist context, we simply call spiritual working on your mind, learning to transform the mind, because what often happens is we know that there are universities for the intellect and that we have gyms for the physical body, but has anybody ever taught us how to work with our minds? And this is the heart of the Buddha's teaching. It's like learning to be with the difficulties rather than pushing them away, and learning to not respond to craving in the old ways, because we've got habitual ways of seeing the world. We get into knee-jerk, unconscious, unaware ways of reacting, whereas in fact Buddhism seems to help people realise that they have another choice. So you're not pushing away and you're not pulling towards, you're simply being with what actually is going on, forming a different relationship to it, which broadens your experience rather than being in this constant battle, this constant struggle with ourselves in our lives, which causes suffering.
For me, it's been very internal. Navachetta was talking about an inability to be in one's body. I couldn't be in my body when I was using at all. I just, it would panic me. So coming here, settling, starting to get a sense of something below my mind was amazing. And a lot of that's been through the meditation and through the body work we do here. But that for me kind of provided, I guess, a foundation and a settling, an allowance of a kind of understanding of God. But it certainly provided a sense of peace and stillness, slowly over time, like a sense of stillness started to come in, which I identify now as an opening to an ongoing relationship with God.
This is Spiritual Outlook on Radio New Zealand National. My name is Justin Gregory, and I'm at the Auckland Buddhist Centre to talk about Buddhism and addiction treatment. My guide is teacher and addiction counsellor, Navachitta. I ask her to give me her definition of what addiction is.
To me, it's when the craving, and the Buddha, of course, addresses the central issue of craving, it's when the craving starts becoming a compulsion. It's also when you're working very much in autopilot. You're working from a habitual state of mind and where everything is knee-jerk reaction. So if you're suffering, you quickly go to the bar rather than actually stay with your suffering. It's learning to recognise when we're being autopilot, and then when we do that, we can realise we have a choice. So the practices we do actually realise, actually, if you slow down your mind a little, you can start responding and acting like an adult. And that means that you can address your craving and your addiction a lot more potently with awareness, with the practice of mindfulness. So it's this compulsion thing. And a lot of us feel that we're in control of our addiction, but actually the things that are going on around this person, going on around this person, indicates that they're not actually in control of their addiction, because their relationships are in tatters, they're on their third DIC, but oh yes, I know how to control my addiction. No, you don't. And I'm not, you know, compassion isn't about feeling sorry for people and just being nice all over the place. It's not like that at all. It can be quite, some people need a bit of spiritual dynamite, as my teacher once said. I come from a long line of alcoholics, actually, lots of Irish great-great-grandmothers and grandmothers who died of softening of the brain. It was written in their death certificate, caused from alcohol. So, and then, of course, the Scottish side, and then I have a bit of Maori as well, so we're all somewhat rampant. And I was a child of the 70s, so I, whatever was available, I opened my mouth and rolled up my sleeve, really, and I became a complete mess. And in fact, I actually think if it weren't for Buddhist practice, I'd either be on Skid Row, or the Auckland equivalent of it, or I'd be dead, or I'd be in a mental institution. I mean, I know it works because it worked for me. I'm not even interested in drinking anymore. I can't think of anything more. Why would you do that?
How did you come to Buddhist consciousness?
I staggered into it.
Took your shoes off, fell over the door.
Yeah, practically. I don't know, I've always had a spiritual... I think actually addicts are very spiritual, very sensitive people, to generalise. They have this huge sensitivity, and because it's too painful to be in this world with that sensitivity, alcohol and drugs help kind of deaden it and numb it. But those very sensitive bits are also what we use to perceive higher spiritual realities. So we suggest that actually you start uncovering them and thawing them out and allowing them to be what they're here for. So I think there's very strong spiritual aspirations in people who get it. And some people walk in here just as I did and get it instantly, and they put themselves into the practices with so much enthusiasm and discipline and courage. I'm so moved constantly by the courage of the people who I see who come in here and work the program.
Sessions take place twice a week at the centre, and I asked Navachitta to tell me what happens.
We welcome people here because a lot of people have never been into a Buddhist centre before, so they don't quite know what to expect. And it's very courageous of people to take that first step. They come in, we sit here in this room, and we just sit in silence for 2 or 3 minutes to help us arrive in the present moment. And we do that because our preoccupations with the past and our preoccupations with the future are usually what prevents us from being very present in the moment. And that's where a lot of the joy in life is. So we do that. We sit there quietly, and then we set them up with an ethical, just recite these ethical precepts, which is about abandoning certain states of mind that will, if we pursue those, lead us into suffering. And nobody has ever batted an eyelid at that. They just love it, because realizing that actually ethics is a really important part of recovery, which they find in 12-step programs. Mm-hmm. So then after that, we do a sharing, typical sharing, but we try and keep it reasonably brief and reasonably elevated. So we don't really necessarily want to know what people have had for dinner. And we may do it on a theme of something that arises, you know, something that's topical, such as, you know, how are you working with your obstacles right now? And sometimes if we have a big group, and sometimes we can get up to 30 people here, we'll just say, what tree are you today? Or what type of weather are you today? And that keeps it brief. And then we might do a little reading, which again is to help people reflect on their own behaviour. And after that, we go into the meditation room, and we often do a body scan. I have a friend who helps me, Punya Shri, her name is, and she works a lot with body awareness, and that is to do with contacting our body, because a lot of people who come into addiction are basically quite traumatized and disassociate a lot, so they actually don't find the body a safe, comfortable place to be. So we create the conditions in the shrine room to help people feel safe and protected so that they can explore the wisdom of the body rather than experience it as something quite traumatic. And then after that, we'll do possibly a period of the mindfulness of breathing as a way to cultivate mindfulness, or a period of the loving kindness meditation, which is about learning to stop that self-loathing and connect with their own deep intrinsic goodness, which all human beings have. We don't do original sin. We have primordial purity.
Navachitta argues for the physical as well as spiritual benefits of meditation within the Buddhist tradition. Essentially, she says, it releases and regulates the good chemicals in your brain.
Actually, it releases oxytocin in the brain that helps us to get into a state of contentment and not wanting. So oxytocin is the cuddle hormone or chemical. They have done, the neuroscientists have actually measured the brain lighting up with oxytocin. I don't know how they do it, but... And you find actually you don't have to rush out as much and do this, that and the other as much when you're meditating regularly. We're often stuck on adrenaline, and we're jangled and we're suffering and we're ravaged. So we drink to allay those feelings of suffering, or we drug. And similarly, dopamine is the achievement chemical. So we rush around trying to achieve, we get out of balance, we reach for a drink or drugs to actually just relax. And so we then have a dopamine imbalance. But wonderfully, oxytocin can actually help.
What's the goal towards a place where you can manage your addiction so you no longer need to go to the thing that it is that you were using ever again? Or is there a different kind of outcome? Or
it's up to the individual, really. I mean, some people do harm reduction, and that obviously their addiction isn't very developed in that case. And so therefore they just drink what they call in a controlled way. But other people realise they would like to abstain. But abstinence, again, is a sense of should. It's a sense of somebody's taking my lollies away from me.
Mm.
And what Buddhists do, or the Buddhist Recovery Network tries to do, is realise that there are other alternatives to just reaching for what you want when you want it. And that is to still the mind and meditate and practice the precepts and hang out with people who have like-minded ideas. And then what happens is that you realise you're not actually abstaining at all, you're abandoning it because it doesn't do it for you anymore, because it's this kind of old, tarnished thing that you don't like anymore, and why would you do that?
So while both Phoebe and Anthony have benefited from meditation in their recovery, has either of them come to understand God in their own way since attending the Buddhist Recovery Network? Anthony says no.
I don't really have a God concept. I don't rely on a God at all. And I don't use the word and don't feel any lesser for it. My recovery is based now on concepts probably more relating to the Dharma. And I would use, if I was seeking a higher power, something greater than myself for guidance, it would be going to the Dharma for refuge, as opposed to seeking it from some mystical force, embodying a person or a man in the sky with a beard, or however, there are a multitude of versions of God for people. I don't feel the need to do that.
I feel equally kind of atheist and spiritual, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, God for me is almost a shorthand for being present, being here, turning up.
What happens inside your mind and your brain, and what do you take away?
It's changed so much over the course of getting well. Now it feels very... it's a relief. It's a relief to be in a room with people meditating. It's very anchoring, very peaceful, kind of heavy, but I guess in a grounded way.
Mm-hmm.
Words that never made sense to me before. They just did not make sense to me. I didn't know what people were talking about, and I would feel panic. And meditating at the start was just this sort of panic of trying to get out of my skull, if that makes sense. Just every part of me not wanting to be there, sitting down in my own skin.
Meditation is really central to recovery for me, and I don't think I would be where I am in my recovery, and quite happily, without it. It's turned recovery into quite a pleasant experience, as opposed to a struggle against sort of inclinations and knowing how to act, or having knowledge of better ways to act, or that certain actions are bad and not wanting to do them but then still doing them. I find meditation is an incredible way of sort of taking knowledge from sort of an intellectual concept down into the realms of emotional knowledge, so that I emotionally respond to the world in a different way. So it's not so much just knowing I shouldn't respond in a certain way. I now naturally respond to the world in that way. I've done quite a lot of research on me and chemicals, and we just don't seem to mix very well. Recovery isn't for me about not drinking. That's sort of, for me, is just the very basic beginning. Recovery for me is about being happy, just about learning to live at ease, and be happy and be kind.
It's being able to bear my own company, feeling far more compassionate towards myself, towards other people, far more alive. It's feeling alive versus feeling dead, basically. I felt like the walking dead. That felt preferable. I feel alive now, for better and for worse. It's subtle, like my feelings, I'm far more aware of subtlety in my responses to the world. I didn't have any subtlety before, so it's very, very interesting. It seems to get more interesting the longer it goes on. Very exciting, very scary, but very exciting.